feature presentation.
This weird aberration society.
I don't like that Ryan guy.
I haven't done one of these in a minute. I don't even remember how to do it, Fred. So,
No, we're good. We're on the same page.
Buckle up. Welcome back to Mutual Aberration Society. It's been a minute, but the podcast has returned. Welcome all who listen and all who don't. Fuck you. No. I'm back, and I'm actually here with return guest, one Fred Barrett. Fred, how are you doing over there? And what part of Europe are you in again?
Right now I'm in Switzerland, but I'm kind of splitting my time.
Right. Fred is at Switzerland. He works for IKEA. Isn't that Sweden? I don't know. Sweden. You know, I'm an ignorant American, and I expose that every time I record on my podcast.
I love that about you.
But we're not going to be talking about ignorant Americans today. We're actually going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about a few things, but specifically Japanese. Wow, surprise, surprise. We'll be talking about Japanese cinema, but it will tie into some other more global kind of, I would say, topically, given the moment that we're living right now, very relevant, specifically when we're talking about the filmmaker who directed this movie that we're going to be talking about, which is called Revolution Plus One.
何の星かわからないけど俺は星になる。
For those who don't know about this movie, it is a, what would you call it, Fred? A kind of, it's not a documentary. It's kind of treads that weird line. It's more like a biopic, kind of, but not
really.
Yeah,
it's kind of a fictionalized biopic. Right.
It's like a fictionalized biopic of Tetsuya Yamagami. Again, if that's wrong. I don't know what to tell you people. You know how I do with these names. Well, Tetsuya, as I'll call him, let me just call him T. My boy T did the honorable thing back in 2022 of assassinating the former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. he did it with a handmade gun. A gun, because for those who don't know, Japan. It's very strict about people having guns, and there's not a lot of guns running around. Despite what a lot of the Yakuza movies that you may have watched have told you, specifically maybe some Miike ones, there's not a lot of guns in Japan. So this guy went about to solve that problem by creating one himself, and he built a gnarly looking weapon, and he slid. To use Chicago vernacular, he slid down on Shinzo Abe and shot him to death. Now, for those who don't know who Shinzo Abe is, he is, again, the former Japanese prime minister, very far right leaning. Let me ask you, Fred, what is your knowledge of Shinzo Abe?
I don't really know that much about him, like, specifically. I just know he's, like, part of the, he kind of emerged in kind of, like, Japan was kind of having a rightward turn, I guess.
Yeah.
And he kind of emerged in that context. But, the politics of Japan are fairly calcified. It's kind of very much an exclusive club, kind of. Where, you know, you're kind of on the right on the political spectrum anyway, and it's just a matter of, you know, how severe is it really? But, like, I think he kind of brought a lot of very openly reactionary ideas, very nakedly reactionary ideas back into, like, the Japanese public discourse, you know, also in terms of, like, Japan's history with, like, China and Korea and I know that, like, in China they hate him, they hate him to death. Like they were selling T-shirts of his assassin, of our boy T.
T-Money,
T-Dog,
T-Money. Shout out to T-Money. Let's start a GoFundMe to send him. let's send him some money. T is down bad. I think he's like in the Osaka. I think they said he's in the Osaka jail or something like that.
I don't even know how that's looking, by the way. I mean, be like death penalty.
I'm assuming.
It's
going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I'm vaguely familiar, and by vaguely, I mean not very much at all, with sort of the Japanese, you know, if you want to call it their legal system. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out. The reason I saw this movie was because of you. How did you come across this movie? I mean, was it on your radar? Is it because of Adachi and his work with what was it, Wokamatsu?
I want to say Wokamatsu. Yeah.
I mean,
for
those who don't know, before I cut Fred off right when I ask him a question, Wokamatsu and Adachi started making pink films. And Adachi wrote a lot of Wokamatsu's pink films. Specifically, I think he wrote what's the one that's the it's kind of like the early version of the Red Army movie that I'm trying to remember the name of it. I'm blanking.
Oh, Ecstasy of the Angels.
That's it. Yeah. Ecstasy of the Angels. Yeah. He wrote that. He also wrote, I'm trying to think of some other ones.
Violated Angels. He also wrote.
Go Second Time Virgin. Yeah. He wrote that. I'm trying to think. He's written several. Before he started directing, he was writing specifically pink films, and mostly for Wokamatsu. Now, is that sort of your entry point for Adachi?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
What I found interesting about there's a lot of interesting things about Masao Adachi. The first time I even have you watched the documentary Pink Ribbon?
No.
Oh, dude, you got to watch it, bro. It's so good. Pink Ribbon, for those who don't know, and I've probably mentioned this before on the podcast, is a documentary about pink films, and it interviews a lot of pink filmmakers. Wokamatsu's in it. Obviously, Adachi's in it. That's the first time I had heard of Adachi was on that documentary. And they actually speak. He actually speaks. In Japanese, because he doesn't speak English. he actually speaks in the documentary a few times amongst other filmmakers, pink films. Sadly, our boy Sato is not on there. He was like the one missing filmmaker that, but this documentary is great. It's a great documentary. I recommend all of those, even if you're not interested in pink films. It's fascinating because it's like a real look behind the curtain at like the history of those movies, how they got made, all that shit. But yeah,
pink curtain, as it were.
Yeah, behind the pink curtain. A shout out to, isn't that the book? That book?
Yeah, exactly.
I actually started reading that book recently. I'm pretty bad. I start five books at once. So
that's same. Jasper Sharp, that's the author.
Jasper Sharp, yeah. Shout out to Jasper Sharp. I know that you said if you've communicated with him in the past, he seems like good peoples. Yeah. I mean, if you wrote a whole book on pink films, you know. It's kind of our kind of.
There's a lot of audio commentary too, like very rare, hard to find pink films. You can often find them with his commentary, which is extremely illuminating. Just like bodiless knowledge, insane.
Well, what I found interesting when I looked into Adachi was that like he is an actually like. And this is kind of one of the reasons I paused the podcast for a minute, because I wanted to focus on less about random films that I come across, even though I will still do that. I really wanted to focus on filmmakers who are making sort of like films that are revolutionary in spirit, you know, and films that are like, because I do feel like today you can't, in America, you cannot make truly radical films. Like, you can't. There are a few people trying. I mean, the only one I can think of who's working with any kind of budget is probably maybe Boots Riley, maybe. And I feel like Boots has probably encountered a lot of things that kind of ultimately compromise even the work that he does, even though I feel like for the most part, I mean, his stuff is so like based in magical realism that like it doesn't even, you know what I mean? Like they let him get away with stuff. Like, I mean, Sorry to Bother You. And obviously his show that he did about the giant in the giant in Oakland. Those show that show and his film is so based in an other reality that he's able to sort of launder in his sort of like radical sort of pro-communist viewpoints in a way that doesn't ruffle the feathers of executives, you know, and the powers that be. But like, I do feel like you can't, as much as sort of the fake duopoly sort of discourses, and I say fake duopoly because it's not real. It's really just sort of like different flavors of right. Like whether you identify as a liberal or a conservative, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's like Diet Pepsi, Pepsi, Coke, Diet Coke. You know what I mean? Like it's not that too far. People are like, oh, it's really different. I'm like, I mean,
they agree on the stuff that matters.
Right. Exactly. That's a great way to put it, Fred. Is they agree on the things that matters when it comes to sort of the way that our system is actually ran. Now, yes, there are social things that are their differences and distinctions. But when you get down to it, really, I mean, they're both pro status quo. And one side may want to absorb other people into the status quo a little bit more than the other, but they're still pro status quo, you know, and you're not going to get a lot of anti-status quo films. So I've made it sort of I made it a goal of mine to sort of lean more towards filmmakers and films that are kind of, again, outside the boundaries of what you would typically find currently in the cinematic landscape. I feel important when I say words like that, cinematic landscape, that you would find currently today in movies. And even now, like even like what I find so obnoxious is the and I think everybody does to a certain degree, is this sort of woke, unwoke discourse. Right.
Yeah.
In general about everything. But when it comes to film, really. Right. Like there is a lot of people who stock and trade now post sort of 2020 and the pandemic has been like their whole thing is like I'm anti-woke and like all the movies that I like are anti-woke. You know what I'm saying? And it's just it's just so corny. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like if you have to say the words woke or anti-woke, I kind of feel like you've already kind of like lost, right? You're like,
you've lost.
You know what I'm saying? Like for real. So you've kind of like lost. I say that to say that there's a lot of people who I hear and see, on social media and podcasts and stuff who like their whole thing is like, they think that they're being really edgy. Cause you know what I mean? They think that like it's art or, I don't know, just the fact that they feel that it's transgressive, but it's not truly transgressive. Like transgressiveness isn't just saying words that people don't like in terms of like, you know what I mean? Are depicting things that, in terms of just like, the interpersonal sort of relationships that characters have on screen, right? Or like the types of characters you show on screen. It's the ideas, right? Like the ideas are what's truly transgressive. And I say that the people who are like the most ardent about like being an anti sort of new Hollywood, anti sort of, you know, things like diversity, you know, and like, I hate to use this word DEI because like, diversity, equity, inclusion has become sort of like the new N-word, like for real, like, you know what I'm saying? Like for a lot of people on the, you know, more right-leaning people, they're like, it's DEI. They don't even know what it means, but they just say it's DEI, right? Or even sort of like the push for representation, all of that shit. Like, I get why some people find it off-putting because they're racist. Other people find it off-putting because it's disingenuous. You know what I'm saying? It is disingenuous, and it is a new form of tokenism. I'm definitely
I mean, it's always kind of a challenge to kind of situate your critique of that stuff kind of in the right space, you know, because you do sometimes, you know, you see this online because you're kind of just firing off like a tweet or whatever, and then you kind of end up like having some real, you know, pieces of shit like agree with you.
Yeah.
You know? You're damn right, brother. You know, it's like, no, that's not where I'm coming from either.
Right, you know? Right. I'm like, fuck both of you guys.
Exactly. You know? So it's always kind of a challenge because, when it's all said and done, like the idea of like having diversity, for example, like obviously I pro that.
Right.
I'm just not gonna, you know, slobber all over like the latest Disney product, you know, just because like they said like, oh, we have our, you know, the first gay character in our, you know, that's like that stuff doesn't cut it for me anymore, you know, just like you slap on these things and it's like the stories are the same, the form is the same, the marketing's the same, but you're just like slapping a black face on, or you know, whatever kind of face on it, right. And that's
my whole point, which is, there's a way that they co-opt, you know what I'm saying? These people, are they co-opt movements? They, you know what I mean? We watched it happen during, you know, the George Floyd protests, right? Like, and like the people within BLM who like basically used it as a scheme to get rich and buy houses. And in doing so sort of like hurt, you know, the greater message of those protests and what it meant. And so now
the momentum, the movement.
Yeah, all of it, right? Everything. All of it. It's successfully, like, you know, and again, shout out to the CIA. Because they totally took that shit, all the air out of it. They've been working overtime. Those motherfuckers are, I keep telling people this all the time. Like, look, America is so goated when it comes to that shit. Like we are the most propagandized people in the world, and it's just funny that like Americans don't even think that way. They think like we're like, it's like, bro, like it is so sophisticated, we spend so much money on it. Like our CIA is like in the intelligence community as a whole over here is like, not only are they in our sort of brains making sure that we sort of stay, you know, mired in this, you know, pro individualistic capitalism headspace at all times, but they're around the world making sure that no other people, you know, fuck with that. If you know what I mean? Like, and I think when things happen, when people, and we keep seeing them over and over again, we keep seeing people realize that they don't like the way the world is set up, and they don't like the way the system runs. And they see that it's not fair. They see the inherent corruption that exists, and things happen, like little explosions keep happening, and then they have to come in and quell it and figure ways to sort of again co-opt any momentum, shift it back towards, you know, let's get things back to normal, because that's all that they said during the pandemic, right? It was just like, we just need to get things back to normal. What was normal though? You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing, like you know, all of these protests, all of these things that have happened, just major historic events, right, have happened.
I mean, even stuff like, you know, the Trump presidency, like you saw so many people like appeal to some kind of, you know, golden age of like, you know, where things were okay, or things were like, you know, everybody was like rules, you know, everybody, you know, kind of followed the rules, whatever. But we forget how ugly that really is, you know, how that was, you know, how ugly that was. Because, like, you know, there was this Chris Bell, the filmmaker, he released a documentary called Miss Me Yet about the Bush administration. And it was so easy to forget because, like, you know, all these, you know, these 4 years of Trump, it kind of just like made the entire world crazy, or the Western world for sure. And you know, you watch a documentary and you see these clips and you see the world the way it was then, or America as it was then, and it's like, it was not, you know, there was nothing to return to after Trump. Like, there was nothing to go back to. Like, it's been shit, you know, like it's just been messed up. Like, it's we need to move forward. Like, we need to look beyond this shit. Like, there's no like going back to anything.
Right. And the return, the alternatives, let me say that, the alternatives that are presented to us again are the same. Or it's like, oh, we can go Biden again, which was horrible. Or we can go Trump again. You know what I mean? Like, and it's like, at a certain point, you have to realize, like, this is rigged. Like, how the fuck is these the two only options that we have?
I mean, the radical option is social democracy.
Right, right.
The radical. And it's like mild social democracy. That's like radical.
Right over here, yeah, because it's so right. It's so right leaning, like, and that, like, the most moderate thing over here is considered super far left. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's kind of like,
and it's increasing. It's that way increasingly in Europe too. You know, that's the trend. That kind of everything from, you know, like kind of these things kind of permeate from America. They kind of permeate the entire rest of the Western world. You know, because people talk like Americans, they think like Americans. You should see the shit that's on TV here. It's like, it's indistinguishable. I mean, I was, you know, 22. I spent like, I don't know, about like a couple of months in Florida. And I was like, there is like no longer any difference. Like, it's just the same shit, like, you know, at this point. Like,
yeah,
Switzerland, Germany, Spain, England, Ireland.
That's crazy that you say you went to Florida and there's no difference, because Florida is like, that is like ground zero for like all the shit. Like, everything happens in Florida. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, in terms of just like, you want to see wild shit, you're gonna just go to Florida.
I mean, okay. I mean, life is different, sure. But I'm just talking like, you know, the way you're kind of propagandized. Like,
I get
the shit that's like, kind of,
I get you.
No, life is very much different. Yeah, okay. Life is very much different.
Yeah, Florida. That's there's a reason that new Grand Theft Auto was set in Florida. I mean, the Vice City was set in Florida too, but you know what I'm saying. Florida's a wild place for sure. I don't even like to like. I know people that like to go there for vacations, and I'm like, I don't even like to do that, to be honest with you. But I mean, I guess it's fine. Shout out to all my Floridians.
Shout out to mine.
Yeah. But you know, I think it's nice. Sometimes, especially when you're not getting hit with a hurricane, and
that's pretty cool. Yeah,
yeah, not you know,
hit with a hurricane.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
But I say all that to say, when talking about Revolution Plus One, and specifically talking about Adache is a filmmaker who, kind of like, well, for those who don't know, he's not allowed to leave Japan. and there's a reason why he's not allowed to leave Japan. And that is because at a certain point, you know, he started, like I already said, he was writing films. Then he's transferred over to directing. Of course, he started with Pink Films, Gushing Prayer, and like, I think the Closed Vagina, Bowl, movies like these. He started with, they were Pink movies, but they were like, if you watch them, he's like doing a lot. It's not like, you could tell, like, the fact that they contain any sex at all is kind of like happenstance. It feels like, you know what I mean? Like it feels like he's clearly that's not what he's interested in. He just understood that, like, this is the elements that I needed because it's a Pink film. This is how I'm gonna get the money for it to make it. So, but it's very radical films. A lot of messaging, like
no titillation. Like, it's very, I mean, people don't like that word anymore because of, you know, all this like Hollywood stuff, but it's very didactic too.
Yeah,
I feel.
Yeah. And
it's very much propagandistic. Some of it is, at least.
And honestly, after watching Revolution Plus One, I started to go through and see, like, okay, what other movies? Again, all the movies that I associated with him have been as a writer. And then I actually watched his documentary, Red Army, PFLP, Declaration of World War, which is co-directed by Koji Wakamatsu and Adachi. And basically, have you seen this, Fred?
Yeah, I have seen it. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, cool. So you already know. Like, basically, like, after the Cannes Film Festival in 1971, Adachi and Wakamatsu visited Lebanon to meet some of the members of the Red Army faction and members of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine to basically shoot, like, this sort of propaganda piece for, like, the Palestinian resistance, which, again, very, like, very, like, of the moment right now, like, you know what I'm saying, considering what's going on in Gaza, considering what's going on in Palestine, you know, like, it hit different to watch that documentary specifically then in the 70s and look at where we're at now in 2024 when it comes to the conflict over there, and you know, the
I mean, some of the images are just like, It's extremely powerful. I actually rewatched bits of it this morning, and like some of the images in there are just like insanely, just like they have so much power. And it's yeah, like you said, I mean, it resonates, not more so, but like it still resonates. It does specifically now, but like it's just I mean, there's like a what's the word? There's like a fearlessness there. I really
Yeah,
feel,
right. It's
you know,
truly,
because like
truly, truly.
it's like, I mean, you know, just like full disclosure, I mean, this is like a recruitment ad basically for
Right.
terrorist organizations. I mean, that's
Right,
what it
right,
is.
right. Well, terrorist or
Well, yeah, I mean, you
in
know,
quote. But when you look at when you really look at it, like I mean it's just it's weird because it's totally a propaganda piece. It's totally that. But a
it's like
lot
a
of what
newsreel, like
Yeah, and what they say, they continuously say over and over again is they say armed struggle, you know, is propaganda. Armed struggle is the true propaganda. Like
the
over and over
title
again.
cards, like really hammering it
Right.
home,
And then
like
also just sort of like them continuously mentioning other organizations across the world, sort of like obviously you've got some of the Japanese army, two Japanese filmmakers talking to Palestinians, you know, the PFLP specifically. And then they're talking, they're mentioning groups like the Panthers over in America. And to just keep talking about like this idea of like unity across, you know, the proletariat and having a one world army, all this kind of wild shit. Now, Wokamatsu, I think was his last film, Red Army. I think
United Red Army.
United Red Army, because
Yeah, I
I
think
think he died in
so.
like 2012, and I think it may have
Yeah.
came out around that time. But and that's like three, it's his 3 hour movie, and it's about the Red Army. And I've heard people talk about that movie and say, like, this is why communism never works, and it kind of like misses the point completely. Like, you
Yeah,
know what I mean?
that's,
Like, that's a
I don't think
very,
that's what
like,
he's trying to say.
that's not what he's trying to say at all. It's a very, that's again, this is interesting about movies is like people can watch a movie and read whatever the fuck they want into it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? Like, because like, if you're anti, like, if you watch Red Army and you're anti sort of, you know, communism or just sort of anything to the left of the status quo, you're probably going to derive, like, oh, look, this just all ended badly. And you're not going to take anything else from it. You're gonna be like, this is what's wrong with society. And it's like, and if you really know Wokamatsu, and I know he probably had different feelings, and I've heard him talk a little bit about this, then you're kind of missing the point of what he had to say about it too. You know what I mean? Like, and obviously his friendship with Adachi tied into that. But like I got a little bit sidetracked, which is Adachi not being able to leave the country. At a certain point, Adachi stopped making films and left and to join the Palestinian resistance. And he fought with them over, you know, he was over there for years until he got caught and sent back to Japan. And then he spent time in prison.
I think he was in prison in Lebanon, and then he kind of got
He
extradited
got
to
extradited to
Japan.
Japan. And they said, I think he spent time in jail in Japan for a little bit too.
Yeah, for just a little bit,
And then they let him out, but now he can't leave. You know what I'm saying? Like now they're like now you just can't leave. You know what I'm saying? But he started making films again. And I think this is his last film, to my knowledge. It's good to know that he started making films back again. But again, just as someone who sort of stood on sort of his beliefs to the point where he was like, yeah, fuck this, I'm gonna go and you know, fight. Like, so you can't say that Adachi is one of these people who isn't like I mean he's someone of who I mean he put his money where his mouth is, you know what I mean?
He was
And you
about
gotta
it. Yeah, he was
for
definitely
you know
about that
for
life.
better or for worse, you gotta respect it on that level, right? Where you're like, okay, well, you know, he did more than just he thought like you know, this filmmaking isn't enough, you know, I'm gonna have to do something else too. And for that, like I just find him a fascinating filmmaker. Because how many of the filmmakers do we know that actually, you know, kind of put their lives on the line, I guess, you know what I
Especially
mean?
these days.
Right. Nah, it's very, you know,
It's fraught.
they won't even try to, they won't even say things like, you know, free Palestine because it'll fuck up some deals. You know what I'm saying? So let alone join sort of like, they wouldn't go join Hamas. You know what I'm saying? Or whatever group that's defending the Palestinian people. You know what I'm saying? Like they wouldn't do that. Like, so let alone would they speak out. You see how they did Jonathan Glazer at the Oscars, you know, like for
And
saying
that
a
was like
very, very mild, a very mild thing of saying like, hey, don't use, you know, the suffering of, you know, my people, don't use the Holocaust and my Jewishness as an excuse to commit war crimes on these, you know what I mean? Like, it's pretty bog standard,
pretty mild stuff,
right?
Like, moderate,
like any reasonable person would be like, yeah, that's fair, but we're not talking about reasonable people here, like, you know what I'm saying, in terms of like, people who are very pro this continuing, like, you know, so it's hard to talk about a movie like Revolution Plus One and a filmmaker like Adachi without kind of delving into these waters, because it's like it's baked in, like, but I will circle back to, so we can talk a little bit more about Revolution Plus One and specifically about sort of how this movie feels. I put this in my, like, my little letterbox, if you want to even call it a review, which is like, this movie couldn't be made here. I mean, one, it's about some shit that happened in Japan. So you could be like, why would we make it? But seriously, like if someone got assassinated, which never really happens, that, like, that's throwbacks to, like, you know, when's the last time a leader got assassinated here? JFK.
Yeah, JFK.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, we've had some people take
tried.
Unsuccessful. You know, Americans suck at, like, assassinating, like, the political leaders now. I mean, we're good at, like, running into some place and, like, sniping off, like, going into a mall and, like, with a Uzi and, like, taking out a bunch of random people for no reason. Like, you know, we're good at that kind of shit. But God forbid we have, like, an actual target of our animosity. It's not, or we're not doing well. Shout out to the previous generations, you know.
That shit done.
They had some real shooters. I'm joking. Don't kick down my door.
Are you?
You know what I mean? But, like, it's just interesting. Like, if something like that were to occur now in America and they made a movie about it, it would not be
like, it would not be this.
No, it would not be this at all. It wouldn't even try. I doubt that it would try. I mean, I could look at movies like the Ted Kaczynski movie I forget the name of it. Is that movie called Ted K or is it called something?
I think so. Yeah. The one with the South African guy.
Yeah. The guy with, let me go on my South African rant. Like, these fucking South African colonizers, like it's weird that, like, they're like, they came into Africa, South Africa specifically, and then they're like, they spoke Dutch and they made, like, this weird, like, Dutch language version, and then they called the shit Afrikaans with two A's, and they have the stupid annoying accent. Like, fuck them people.
Horrible to listen to.
Fuck them. Like, shout out to Neil Blomkamp. But
the director of Gran Turismo.
Yeah, fuck them. Like, but yeah. where was I, Fred? But you wouldn't see a movie like Revolution Plus One made, and that's kind of what is interesting me right now, is like, how do you make movies like, because that's what I want to see. I keep beating this like a dead horse, but like, this is what I mean by, like, America is like, as much as they want to talk about other governments, specifically Americans want to talk about, like, the CCP, the Chinese government, and, like, how they're like, you can't say things over there. And they, like, I'm like, you know, you can't say things over here. Right.
Right.
Like, you know that, right. Try and make something like, you know, this about America in any way, any American figure, and see the roadblocks that they will throw in front of you immediately. Like, there are just certain things they're not, and as much as the people on the right want to talk about, like, you know, it's woke and all this bullshit, you know what I mean? Like, you realize that, like, it doesn't matter if you went to sort of the more, if you went to, like, Daily Wire, you know, and tried to make something, they're going to make sure that you make a certain kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you're not going to make a thing that they don't think is okay. And vice versa, if you go to the studios, which they perceive as, like, liberal Hollywood, it's super, you know, leftist Hollywood, communist Hollywood, like, what I wish, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it used to be that when they had, that's why they had, and then they had the blacklist, and they blacklisted those motherfuckers, and now it's not like that. But, like, you know, like, you try to make anything that's, like, truly radical, you're gonna get, that shit is not, you're gonna have to do it outside the system. And even once you've made it, they're going to throw roadblocks in the way in terms of you getting it out there to people. Like, you know, they're going to start you know, they're going to start trying to minimize sort of the ability for you to have any sort of reach.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? With a film like that.
Also the infrastructure kind of outside of the Hollywood system is just completely, I mean, either you kind of go into like this grifter sphere where you make like cheap, usually conservative propaganda, or you have to kind of play ball with like big studios. Mm. And like the infrastructure outside of that has really just kind of diminished to a point where it's basically not really sustainable for any kind of filmmaker operating in that space.
Yeah.
So that has kind of narrowed the, let's say the ideological flexibility even more, you know? So I guess maybe 30 years ago, you could conceivably make maybe a radical movie and have some kind of infrastructure in place that, you know, could get your movie made and kind of distributed, you know, in some limited way perhaps, but these days it's pretty much over. You have to do like GoFundMe or something.
Yeah, I mean, and that's another reason why sort of my interest has kind of been more towards new models, new, you know, hopefully I have a lot of hope in sort of younger people coming of age now. Just seeing sort of like, for example, them like the banning of TikTok or the attempt to ban TikTok here, and sort of the rationales behind it, right? One, it's kind of fucking crazy. Like, again, we talk about America being sort of like so different from China, like when they don't realize like one of the most McCarthyist, like this is like some McCarthy era shit. They're saying like, hey, you got to sell this company in order for, or we were going to ban it. Like America has to own this fucking company. You know what I mean? Like that's insane. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like they're free. This country, and this is this fun thing that's funny. This country loves to be about like the market, let the market decide, you know, on some like the free market. And it's like, well, where's that free market talk now? Yeah. Like all of a sudden you want to like say, fuck you. Like there's no, this is an illusion.
And the market is everywhere. I mean, it's even the marketplace of ideas. Like everything is
Market. Right. And it's just like, so now that, and then of course, obviously AIPAC is, it just discovered that AIPAC is one of the biggest reasons for this to be pushed through Congress.
Yeah.
It's like AIPAC is like, yo, like we have, I think I forget his name. I'm blanking on his name. He's in AIPAC, and he was saying like, we have a TikTok problem. Like we don't have a right or a left problem. We have a TikTok problem.
We have a TikTok problem.
Like, cause the youth is like very pro Palestine.
Yeah, corrupted by TikTok.
Right. So I say that to say, like, I do have a lot of hope in sort of like the younger people coming up now, because they are seeing the world that they live in, and they're rejecting a lot of the narratives that they've been, you know, so that that other generations have, you know, been so consumed by and like indoctrinated by. And I just look at the landscape and I think there's something coming. And I've been saying this since I've started this podcast, I keep saying there's something coming. Who knows when that is actually going to happen, but I do feel that way, because it's inevitable. It doesn't matter how much they fight it. Like it's still coming. Like they may slow it down. They may impede its progress, but it's coming. Like, and sort of all these sort of like movements that people like to talk about, specifically film movements, since we're talking about movies, whether it's the French New Wave, whether it's New Hollywood, whether it's shit like in Brazil, Cinema Novo, like all of those
New Waves.
Right. Like the people are going to make things that are a response to the world that they live in. And I don't see, even with the advent of things like AI and all of this, you know, kind of new ways in which they've attempted to completely. Well, I mean, they kind of have. They've successfully kind of neutered, any sort of artistic, I would say artistic merit. None of these films have merit for the most part. Help me here, Fred. You know words. You speak multiple languages. You know.
well, I mean, they have kind of succeeded in kind of capturing the imagination and like neutering the imagination of a lot of people, because like even if we talk about like, you know, I mean, there isn't some like golden age where everybody was talking like you know, like they wrote for Cahiers du Cinéma or something. You know, that's obviously not true. But like these days, even you'll have people who write about movies for a living, and they'll say, oh, you know, they'll have like this pedantic kind of petty shit to offer, which just kind of illustrates how much our imagination has kind of been limited by these things, where it's kind of like a film isn't like a composite of like different things, but more like is treated almost more like a, like just like a factory for like information, you know, where it's just like this happens, then this happens, then this happens, you know. And kind of, and I feel like you kind of had to this trend happen for a couple of years for AI to actually be a thing that some people are willing to accept, where you kind of reduce the art form, you know, where it's just like a shot doesn't have composition. A shot is just like, I'm just standing here and I'm holding my camera and aiming it at a thing.
That's a great observation. I hadn't really thought about that, but you're right. I always rail about sort of like the guru books that like have become so ubiquitous. You know, obviously Save the Cat, you know, The Hero's Journey, you know, screenplay by Sid Field, Robert McKee's story, all of these books that sort of like are the template sort of for writing a screenplay, that have become sort of like de facto Bibles for not only screenwriters, but for executives too.
Yeah.
They sort of are the building blocks by which AI was able to come to be, because AI is basically mimicking this shit, because there's mimicking other writers who are writing these screenplays, who are hitting these notes, you know what I'm saying? Like these beat by beat, like what happens in these three acts. And it's like, that shit to me is very, you know, like once you get inside of it, I feel like you could go two ways. Me being a screenwriter, like I could have went two ways, and I know a lot of people that went a different way than I did. I feel like the most people go a different way, which is you start writing scripts, you start making money, and you start like having things potentially make money, and sort of like you get introduced to even get your foot in the door. The script has to look a certain way, right? It has to have a certain structure. So you got to sort of on some level accept that. So you go like, okay, how do I write a three act structure? Yada, yada, yada. You sort of get that. And then you get, maybe it gets noticed, you know what I'm saying? And then maybe it gets your foot in the door. And at that point, that's when the ball starts rolling. And if you get into this line of work and you start to work a lot, the goal is to work. The goal is to, you know, write scripts and, you know, support yourself, hopefully make money doing it. So you start taking the notes, you start, your reps start telling you, you know, to write to the market. And then, you know, you get notes back like, well, this should happen in the third act, or this should happen here. We need a female protagonist because female protagonists are hot, and we need, you know, like right now, everything or this is hot right now. And you get in that hamster wheel, and then flash forward 5 years, 10 years later, you've completely adopted that. And that's how you see anything. That's how you see film. That's how you see script writing. That's how you see writing. I feel like that's the typical path. Or you get like me and you hit a point where you're like, I don't want to do that. Like you at a certain point you look up and you're like, wait a minute, this is just teaching me to be like everybody else. This is just teaching me to make the thing that they already make. Fuck that. Like, I already know all these rules. I'm subverting them. I'm trying to do things that I'm trying to prove that shit is bullshit, that you can do anything. That's the other path. And of course, you end up like me. This is a cautionary tale. But you know what I mean? Like there's one of two paths and I reject all that shit. Like, yeah, I know it. Like, yeah, I could do that. Yes, I have done it. You know what I'm saying? When push comes to shove and they're just like, just get it done. I can do that. I can write the three act structure. I can write the script that looks just like the script that whatever, but it's like, no, you know what I mean? Like, if I need to pay some bills and it comes, my back's against the wall, sure. But that's not something that I'm proud of. That's not something that like I want to do. You know what I mean? That's not something that is pushing anything. It's not pushing any boundaries. It's not pushing anything forward. It's not doing. It's just, again, you're just maintaining the status quo, and you're making.
And yet we're kind of expected to treat it, you know, because people feel self-conscious, and then it's like you can't actually criticize it anymore because, like, you know, people get in their feelings or whatever. But it's like, you know.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's what it is. Like, just, you know, if it's just a job, say, look, it's just a job, but it always has to be like, it always has to have this like legitimacy about it. Like, no, it's actually just as good. Like,
because
actually what I'm doing here is just as radical.
Right. It's not. But that's the thing. It's like, they want it both ways. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, these people want it both ways. They want to be rich and successful under capitalism, but they also want the sort of artistic credibility.
Right.
And they want all that comes with it. They want everything. Yeah. You know, it's like Scarface, like, you know, I want the world. Fuck it, all of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what they want. And it's like, it don't work that way. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't just be like, hey, I get paid a lot of money to write this sort of like very boilerplate, you know, shit. And the fact that I live a comfortable life and got to do that, that's not enough. Because I feel like psychically, you know what I'm saying? Psychically is not even probably even the right word. I feel like, you know, psychically, like the X-Men, like we can like, you just got to sort of like put yourself in the shoes of someone living that way. Like what it does to their psyche, like in terms of just like, because they always say this all the time. And by they, I mean, like, just in general, when you hear, like, people talk about screenwriting or Hollywood and filmmaking in general, this specifically in screenwriting more so. I don't hear directors saying this as much. Maybe you hear actors saying it, but they always talk about this thing called imposter syndrome.
Oh God.
guarantee if you listen to any sort of interview with a screenwriter about anything, which why would you do that? Like, why would you listen to an interview about a screenwriter? Anyways. But if you happen to have the ability to listen to that shit, you'll hear them bring up imposter syndrome. Which is very telling. Like, you know what I mean? Like, sure, people experience imposter syndrome across different, you know, it's not relegated to just this specific field. I mean, there's plenty of people that experience imposter syndrome, but it's very prevalent when it comes to screenwriting. And I do feel like it is indicative of sort of like what I'm trying to get at, which is like, you're doing this work and you know that it is not real work. And I don't mean real work in terms of labor. I mean art, because, you know, I mean just real work, like in terms of just like, you're like just
artistic.
On an artistic level. Yeah. It's just not really, it's homework. Like, these people are doing homework. You know what I mean? Like, these people are doing what they did in college if they went to college. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is their approach, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not even, and listen, I love craft. You know, craft is cool. Like, if you're good at your craft, that's great. But it's not even craft, dog. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not even, you're doing, people who are actually crafts people, craftsmen, craftswomen, crafts, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, people who do, like, you're doing a disservice to actual people with craft by just labeling this shit as craft. Like, you're not really, you know, like, even.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the Talented Mr. Ripley yesterday. Mm-hmm. I rewatched it, I should say. Mm-hmm. And what struck me, like, speaking of craft, you know, because like, this is like, I mean, this is, to me at least, this is like a very kind of, you know, like above average kind of prestige 90s thriller, which is just kind of a typical like journeyman, you know, like, I'm not going to say hack job, but, you know, on some level, maybe right. it is, you know, right. kind of like a elevated hack job kind of thing. But what struck me was, if this came, like, it probably, if I was like an adult in 99, I would have been like, whatever, you know, sure, it's fine. But now, you know, comparing it to like the films that occupy that space these days, it's insane. It's like an art house movie, you know, compared yeah. to like the craft is so much, has gotten so much, or like even the idea of craft has gotten so, it's, I don't even know, like watered down. Like it's just nothing. Like
it's a whole, because it became a whole industry within an industry, yeah. if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, we watched, because even if think about it, Jaws, right, which is the demarcation point that most people say was the beginning of the blockbuster,
yeah,
right, Jaws is very recent,
yeah,
like, you know what I'm saying? So like, while, when did Jaws come out? Like
75,
like, so we weren't born yet, but we were just around the corner, you know what I'm saying? Like, so,
well, you were,
but yeah, I mean I was a lot closer than you are, but you know what I mean, but we were just like, we like Jaws is not that far away from, like, yeah. you know what I mean, like, really, like, it's not that old, like, so you got to think about that, like, you could track the trajectory and the changes that have happened over the decades in a very rapid fashion to where we are now, yeah. and the way things are now. So like, you're right, like, just post that sort of initial blockbuster boom, there was probably some wiggle room for artists, because the industry's fucking young, like, you know what I mean, like,
yeah.
it's
yeah.
not been around that long, like, you know what I mean, like, in the scope of history, it's not, filmmaking as a thing hasn't been around that long,
it's a blip, like, yeah.
yeah, it's relatively a young thing, so like,
yeah,
like, there's a lot of changes that have become sort of normalized now, but when you, so it's like, you can look back at movies just from like the 90s and even the early aughts and be like, damn, it was different. Like, you know, it wasn't, mm-hmm. it wasn't like it is now. Like, you know, so yeah, yeah. a movie like the talented Mr. Ripley, and then you juxtapose it with a movie like Saltburn, which I refuse to watch, which is basically, I heard, is the untalented Mr. Ripley, which is, you know what I'm saying? Like, or it's like the same thing, like, but you notice how people are obsessed with that type of story, that sort of Gatsby yeah. kind of story. Again, imposter syndrome, which is, what is Gatsby about, right? Gatsby is about like a guy who's faking who he really is, right?
Yeah.
And you know, I've never read I have Gatsby somewhere in his books or whatever. I've never gonna read it. I think they tried to make me read it in school and I still didn't read it. but my whole thing is, stories like that, why are they so prevalent? Like in Hollywood specifically, Saltburn. How many times have we had The Talented Mr. Ripley? There's about four or five movies that I can say are basically that. Like, that are the.
Yeah, there's a miniseries too. I saw it on Netflix.
Right. Like there's a lot of retellings of that Patricia Highsmith story. That, like,
yeah.
in their own way, about this imposter amongst the beautiful or the elite or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Even just the idea of like infiltrating. I mean, Pasolini made a theorem or teorema. In Italian, yeah. and isn't there another one, Visitor Q?
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Mike. Yeah. You know, but you know, the Visitor Q is that's some other shit.
that's like, you know, had to throw it out there though.
Yeah. That's a good version of.
But yeah, I like this idea of like infiltrating, like, yeah. you know, because that, like, you know, The Talented Mr. Ripley, I mean, it is obviously like a psychological kind of thriller, drama, whatever. But I mean, it's also, and you know, it's also, of course, about like these repressed, like gay, queer desires,
yeah.
or not so repressed, I should say. And, but you know, it's also, I guess, kind of like about like a class being infiltrated
right.
in a way,
right. which
I and think it's, gives it a lot of resonance that isn't just, you know, but back then obviously the dichotomy was more like working class, kind of middle class, like upper yeah. middle class kind yeah. of thing, but like, you know, it kind of represents a lot of, I mean, you know, speaking of Jaws even, mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of like, you know, in a sense, like the shark is infiltrating
yeah.
like a space, you know, in some way. That's like an anxiety that just resonates, like,
and it's interesting that you bring that up, because I do feel like There's another reason. There's another layer to why these stories continue to be made, and it's deeper than just the imposter syndrome thing. That it is a class anxiety thing for sure. I mean, these movies are all about class anxiety, but it's just interesting how the ones that get made now are mostly like sort of like petty bourgeois striver kind of fucking, you know what I mean? Like it's like we gotta, you know what I mean? Like it only sort of, even if it's a critique of the wealthy, it's you still come away from the movie feeling like, yeah, but like I still need to be wealthy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I still need
They
to be
still had
there though. You know what I'm saying? Like
it
it don't really matter. I still need to get that bag though, right? And at the end of the day, like, you know, like this is what I let listen, like I got friends of all stripes, of all, despite my like radical leanings, you know what I'm saying? Like I have friends of all stripes, all different sort of
Yeah, of course, of
right
course.
leaning, you know, left moderate, centrist, liberal, whatever. Like I
I mean, that's what
encounter
happens when you live in the real world. I mean,
right. You can't, you just, listen, it's not all, you're just all these groups, you're fighting this class war. That's not real. You know, that's like some imaginary shit online. But I will say this, like I really, the incessant bag chasing here is just so fucking, like I'm just sick of this shit, bro. I blame Jay-Z. Like you know, I blame people like that, like, you know, they're all, I'm a hustler, I'm a hustler, like bro, like so what, like you know what I'm saying, like you know, like get your bread is such a fucking, I've grown to hate it, you know what I'm saying,
Yeah,
like
same.
I just accept this, my brain works differently than all of these people. Like I
Yeah.
think differently than all of these people. You know what I'm saying? Like they don't see, they are so, they just accept it, right? They
Yeah.
accept it. They accept, like, whether they understand it or not, they just kind of accept the world that they live in. Like it doesn't matter. Like at the end of
Yeah.
the day, they're like, fuck it, I gotta get mine, and like I got kids to take care of. As if no one else has kids too, dog.
Yeah,
The
first
difference
person
between
of
me,
every kid.
and a lot of people is this too, Fred, as I get up on my soapbox here, is I care about your kids too, even if I don't know you. You don't give a fuck about mine because you've told me that without saying that. Like, you know, but I actually do care, dog. Like, you don't. Like, because I understand how, like, our destinies are all tied to each other. You know what I mean? Like, whether it doesn't matter that, like, I don't know somebody. Like, it doesn't matter that, like, someone is all the way across another side of the world. Like, you know, our fates have a direct connection. Like the way our society is organized, the way things are structured, like it's all tied in. It's all part of a greater system. And for you to ignore that, you know, that's a choice. You could do that if you want. The problem is that what they don't say is that, like, none of us have a choice. I say that shit all the time. Like, this shit is non-consensual. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I'm like, yo, I'm against it or whatever. I'm forced to participate to a certain degree to sustain my life. So I'm not going to stop doing that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm not going to stop doing that. Like that's beside the point, but that doesn't mean while doing so, I'm not going to point out the realities of like why the shit is fucked up, why the shit isn't right. And if I have an opportunity to do anything to counter that, hell yeah, I'd do it. But I just get tired of like watching films that sort of just double down on that, like, or just sort of like reiterate that bullshit. They're not asking any interesting questions. They're not probing at any interesting ideas. They're not pushing the boundaries at all, because the boundaries are just like, yo, get rich. That's all you got to do.
No, for real. I mean, I remember I saw this French film that was I forget the name, but it was fairly recent, and it was about it was about this mother. She had a kid, and she was, you know, she worked at a hotel, she was a maid, and she had all these, like, you know, bougie ambitions. And then, like, the kind of the film ends with her just kind of achieving her goals. And I was just like, what the fuck was the point of any of that? Like, who cares about the status quo? Like, honestly, genuinely, I would have rather had the movie be like just openly reactionary. At least they would have had something to say. But who the fuck looks at the world and is like, you know what? No, we're good.
You know
Like, who
what?
does that?
To be very topical right now, P. Diddy once said, "Mo money, mo problems," and he's the living example of that currently.
Look for
But
example. Yeah.
people never really examine that beyond just the surface level kind of like thing that the people throw out there, right? Like, you know, because people always people frame things as haters and not haters and my haters, and it's deeper than that. Like, yeah, like sure, you could take it on a surface level, like, okay, I got haters or whatever, more money, more problems. But what, think about that though. Every person that I know that has money is fucking miserable. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this idea, like, yeah, it must be nice to be able to have disposable income and not worry about like your fucking house getting foreclosed on or you getting evicted by your landlord. Sure. That's not a, you're not going to fucking get me to say, oh, it's easier or anything. No. What I am saying is this. If you people that think that just having money is the fucking answer, you're deluding yourself. You're psyoping yourself into sort of like believing this bullshit where it's like, yeah, okay, now you have all this money, but now what? Citizen Kane, you're just in that big ass house and you're just fucking thinking about Rosebud and shit. Like, you're just, you know what I mean? Like, shout out to
huge empty house, no one in it, just no miserable.
Nothing, just this big ass empty house, and you're just looking around, like, and I got 7 cars in the driveway, and it's just like, you can't, first of all, you know, I love cliches and I love old sayings and shit. And you know, it's that's cliche of like, you know, you never seen like a U-Haul behind a hearse. You can't take none of this shit with you. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it doesn't fucking matter. Like, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, like, and I just don't see any, I don't see any art that's piercing the sort of, that's sort of piercing them. I don't know what to say mainstream, because mainstream's not the right word.
I know what you mean, this scope, this kind of societal scope that we're kind of,
I don't see any art that's like bubbling up and resonating with people at a certain level. Like, it's just blocked out. Like, it's just like blocked. So like,
I think one issue is that you know, for example, I mean, you know, speaking of the US, for example, I mean, there's basically the entire momentum of like any kind of leftist subversive political force has just been completely aborted. Mm-hmm. So there is like a huge knowledge gap there too. I mean, if you know, since we're talking about Revolution Plus One, technically we are. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting to see him kind of tie all, you know, this what's happening, what happened with that assassination. And he kind of ties it into like the history of like political radicalism or political activism, or, you know, to use an anarchist term, like the propaganda of the deed kind of, and he kind of ties it into that history. But like, what do you do if you don't have that history?
That's a good point. And,
you know, so I think that's a big, you know, because like, even just like talking about myself, I mean, not to be too transparent about my political activity, but like, I know that a lot of knowledge I had, or you know, gained, kind of, I got from people who were in it before me, right?
Right.
So somebody who was like an activist for 20 years, and I joined an organization, and they're like, oh, you need to kind of do it like this, or look at this, remember this, and kind of approach it this way. This is like, you know, I would have never, for example, like I would have never read Lenin.
Right.
If it wasn't for like some people, because I was like, you know, I was like young. I was like, no, I fucking hate, you know, like the Russian Revolution. No, that's like authoritarian, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, right.
And then you actually read the shit and it's like, damn, this is crazy. And then you know, but like, I needed someone to tell me, to kind of show me the way, kind of.
Yeah.
Not tell me what to think, but like, tell me, look, there's a lot of fucking knowledge out there.
Mm.
And you can either take advantage of it or you can't, or like, you know, it's there. So I feel like that's kind of what's missing from a lot of radicalism, or like a lot of radical art in America too, is there is no real tradition. Like, nobody knows
because how the to tradition the because they went out of their way to get rid of those people.
Exactly. It was
like, people forget, yeah, like, you know, like,
aborted,
right?
Yeah.
Like, look what they did to the Black Panthers. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and that's like the prime example, really.
Like, they were like, they had a whole education platform, like, you know what I'm saying, like political education platform for the people, like, and they and like, it's just funny because they were like Maoist, you know what I'm saying, like, they that's how they identify themselves as Maoist, you know what I'm saying, like, you can't name a lot of, I don't know a lot of people who've read Mao here, like the little red book. Like,
yeah,
I don't know a lot of people.
My dad has it actually. He worked in China back in the day, and they gave him like a.
You know, that's an interesting thing. In the documentary that we were talking about that Adachi did with Wokamatsu, it's funny that his name is like Wokamatsu. but in the documentary, when you look at the Palestinians, they're showing them with like, you know, they're sitting around and they have their like rifles and shit. And they all have little red books, the little Mao, little red books in Arabic and shit. Right. Like, I just thought that was a strange, again, it's a propaganda movie, but you know what I mean? Like, that's definitely,
I remember that image very well. But
it's still interesting to see like, you know, like them sort of like pushing sort of like people to, you know, read work like Mao. The people that I hear talk about Mao are usually here are just in the West are just reactionaries. You know what I'm saying? They're like,
usually,
Mao is a fuck. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, like, come on. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like you're actually going to engage with anything that he's written anyways. You know what I mean? Like, so you're right though, when it comes to like the value of the people before the generations before being able to be there to point you in the right direction. Where I feel like that has been sort of all the people in America got chased, either killed, imprisoned, are relegated to sort of the academy. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you could be
or
a professor.
Exiled in some cases.
Right. Yeah. Exiled completely. Some of them, you know, got the fuck out the country. You know, shout out to Kwame Ture. Some of these people got like, you know, Layla's like, fuck this. I'm out. You know what I mean? I got to leave. I got to leave America. And they either left. They were killed, they were imprisoned, or like I said, they ended up being a professor, and then like maybe they get fired because they said something too radical, you know, like Palestinians should have rights or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
that's crazy. What? I can't see that. Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. You know, tenure. Yeah, right. Get out of here. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of like where we're at now. So you have some people, that's why you have like a lot of like inner people, like say when you're young, you know, being exposed to ideas like Marxist Leninist, you know, Leninism is like exciting because you have the energy and youth and whatever, like, oh shit. And that's true. But another reason is I feel like a lot of young people are discovering it now because it's like a lost thing. It's like, no one told me about this shit. Nobody.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. Well, you know what I mean? Like as if someone was there to tell them this before, they would probably be like, wow, but the energy would be different.
Yeah.
I think, you know what I mean? Like the energy would be a lot different. They would probably feel less lied to, you know? And I feel like now young people that come across sort of these ideas, they just feel lied to in America because you're not seeing none of that shit. Like you're not getting, you know, you're not even getting, you know, a look at history. Like I had American history, you know, in school, and like that shit told me nothing, dog. Like you know what I'm saying? Like it was the most bullshit. Like, you know what I mean? Like I don't even like was it history? Like I don't even know. Like I might as well just went to see Hamilton. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like even though it wasn't out when I was in school, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like you might as well, because that's what it was. It's minus the corny raps. Thank God. Thank God it didn't have any horrible rapping as I learned history. But like it's just Hamilton bullshit, bro. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like ain't teaching you nothing. Like, you know what I mean? They're selling you America it's a, you know, propaganda piece. This is an American propaganda piece. You know what I mean? Where it's like very much in school. It's just like, you don't learn history. You learn.
I feel like that's the history of, or the reality of most of the West though. I mean, looking back on, you know, just like people I've interacted with, like in Europe, all across Europe, it's not really that different. I mean, I guess it's maybe less severe because there's still some ripples of like actual, like, unionists and leftist movements that kind of changed the narrative to some degree. But I mean, if you look at Europe today, I mean, it's extremely ideologically conformist, you know, like there's barely any room to debate really anything. And, you know, even if you look at like, you know, like I don't know, maybe a social democratic party or something. Like they'll talk about refugees, and sure they'll be like more humane. Like they'll still talk about it essentially as a problem,
right?
And definitely
right.
not as a problem created by our countries,
right? Yeah.
So you know, like I feel like that's kind of a process.
That shit is good. That America's going crazy with that shit right now, dog. Yeah. Biden, all of them. It doesn't matter, left, right, whichever way you look. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like in terms of the two major parties, it's like anti fucking immigrant shit. And I'm sitting
here
like, bro, like I'm sitting here like, dog, I don't even believe in borders.
Like, right, exactly.
Like, you know, what I'm saying? I'm sitting there like, what the fuck? How could you put a border on some shit? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
let alone like a wall or
right, like as if like, oh, because you were born over there on that side of the earth, like, you can't come here at all, like, as if you're not a human, like, you know what I'm saying, like,
right. As if it's not our place to
right,
just be.
Right. Like, what the fuck? Like, it's such a, like, it's crazy that people still think that way, but it's, I mean, you know what I mean? Of course, immediately what they point to is crime and all this other shit.
Yeah.
But like you said, ignoring the conditions by which the countries that these people come from are as a direct result of the actions of our government. You know,
that's
creating the position
thing, because they would never advocate to actually improve something over there or like stop exploiting them.
Right. You're that
literally would be probably the number one.
Like America's literally fucking it up over there.
Yeah.
And then the people are like, I'm getting the fuck out of here and coming here. And they're like, what?
Wait, no. What?
Like, first of all, you created the problem. Second of all, if you want to say these people are more criminal, I mean, or whatever, like,
yeah.
Ask yourself why.
Yeah, what happened to
them that they led a life that you could, that leads to criminality or whatever the case may be? What conditions were they born under? Yeah. What were they raised in? And what was the role to play of America in that, American foreign policy specifically? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, people aren't trying to do all that, dog. That's too.
No, that's too much.
It's like macro. You know, like you can't.
Yeah. I got ads to watch.
Yeah, right. I got a bag to chase, dog. I'm not worried about that shit. I'm chasing a bag.
I'm waiting for that Dunkin' Donuts check.
I got a bag to chase. I mean, I hate these. I hate America. Yo, fuck this country. It's really like one of those things where like I know people who are actively involved in like certain government like jobs and shit, right? And it's like I talk to them and I'm just like I just want to be like, yo, just fuck the system, like, you know what I'm saying? Just like I don't, like, you know, again, like, you can't. And it's really, I know people who are engaged in like actual, like, they have their hearts in making change, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel for those people. Because every time I talk to them, they only express hopelessness.
Yeah.
Like, they still have enough hope to continue, you know, which is good, which is always that is a heartwarming kind of gesture, I guess, that they can continue on despite feeling like there's nothing they can actually do. But I just look at them and I'm just like, yeah, the answers aren't trying to make legitimate change within the system is, it's just like, it's set up for you not to do that. So,
and it's unsustainable. I mean, you're just wasting your energy day in, day out. I mean, that energy is just going to be, I don't want to say wasted. That sounds mean.
Yeah. It's not even that. It's like, and that's why I feel bad, because it's like, it's one of those things where like we need people like that. We do. We need people like that pushing.
And they do change stuff. Like, it's just not, you know.
Right. And it's just like, we still need, those people are still valuable people. And regardless of whether or not they're enacting much change at all, the fact that there's people there in those positions doing anything like that is important. So I always, I'm conscious of that, like, you know what I mean? I don't want to be like, oh, well, it's fucking pointless, fuck it, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, that's too easy, you know,
it's like, you get that message every day anyway, so like, you know, why would I like try to double down and be like, you know we got to burn the shit down, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like, it's not, it's like not helpful. But it's interesting to tie it back into Revolution Plus One. And you were saying like how, well, Adachi is personal sort of history when it comes to like leftist politics and shit, and how this specific incident with our boy T-Money is completely just a lone wolf. Like this guy had no,
yeah,
no, you know, and again, it ties back to alienation, right? An alienation is something we see a lot, like, especially in America, we see it a lot, but obviously you see it in Japan too, because they're a hyper-capitalist nation as well. And like, this sort of like individual who strikes out on his own with no sort of like, and there's a Wokamatsu, what's, I keep saying Wokamatsu. I love that his name sounds like Wokamatsu. But Adachi, I pulled up from an interview that he was doing about this movie, and I'll just read it because I thought it kind of hits on what you were talking about. He said, "When I first heard about former Prime Minister Abe's assassination, I thought it was an act of political terrorism. As I learned more about the shooter, Tetsuya Yamagami, I came to realize that he did not have any background in organized political action and was rather freely roused to action by individual concerns. I thought the meaning of this incident was immeasurable. I imagined the hardships that Yamagami must have endured before the shooting. I realized that the state of Japanese politics was imposing a feeling of entrapment on youth. I felt compelled to reveal such circumstances in a film. For context, Yamagami was motivated to commit this act by the criminal actions of the Unification Church, a fraudulent group with ties to Abe that extracts money and assets from individuals and families in the name of religion. The key point that Yamagami acted as an individual executioner who came to his own decision about how to fight against this criminal group, rather than being directed by a political organization or social movement." Boom. You know what I'm saying? It's a very, I feel like that's why a movie like Revolution Plus One is very, is prescient the right word?
Yeah.
Prescient. Because that in and of itself describes the existence of a lot of people today. Like when shit happens, it's always this very like one person strikes out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because they feel like this is the only alternative. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and it's a kamikaze move. Japanese, you know, I mean, it's Japanese, you know, they're the ones who came up with the kamikaze shit. But you know what I mean? Like, it is very much like it's a suicide mission. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know that you're probably going to get killed doing this or thrown in jail forever, you know, but fuck it. You know what I mean? Like, this is the only way. I have no other alternative and I got no justice. And I feel like he should be pardoned and given a Medal of Honor, but but that won't happen.
yeah, I don't think it will.
We haven't really talked about the Unification Church. Do you know much about the Unification Church?
No, not really. Not to speak like with any kind of authority on it.
I mean, it doesn't stop me, you know.
Well, true.
I want to say, now correct me if I'm wrong. Let me, since I'm sitting in front of a laptop, let me look this up in real time. Was the Unification Church tied to that cult that, did they have ties to the cult that did the subway gassing bombings in Japan?
Oh, well, that I don't know. I know what you're talking about though. What not?
Let me, sure. I should check that up.
It seems like there's maybe like a little ecosystem of just like cult activity with like kind of suspect ties to like government officials and stuff and like military.
So yeah, the members of the cult movement, Ayum Shinriko, they did the subway attacks in 95. Let's see if I want to say that there is a relationship between them and the Unification Church, but maybe it's just the fact that they're just both religious. Was it the Unification Church and how Japan's probe? Well, there's some shit on Reuters about it. Was the Unification Church and how Japan's probe affected? Okay. I don't know. The Aum Shinrikyo Doomsday Cult faced a disillusion following the prison gas attack. Japan to disband. What? Japan seeks to dissolve Unification Church connection to Shinzo Abe's assassination. I mean, it keeps having. This is why you should do. This is why people you should do research before you do a podcast. It's interesting. Wow, this is like a deep rabbit hole.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're involved in the I think they're like they have some ties to the Falun Gong.
Yeah,
in China.
Yeah,
which I'm pretty sure there's some kind of overlap there.
And I wouldn't be surprised if some of these. I wouldn't be surprised if some of these were like CIA cutout kind of deals, you know?
I feel like a lot of these cults are. I mean, even Scientology. I mean, you know, it's just like these like weird ass connections that, you know. I feel like we should do like an episode at some point, like just like a Noid It Out like episode, just like talking about like weird intelligence.
Yeah, we should
shit.
Do a since speaking of was it what's the guy who does Jimmy Falun Gong?
Didn't he
recently
call it a day recently?
Right. He recently stopped doing his podcast program to chill. So.
I mean, yeah, no disrespect to him. I followed him on Twitter and everything, but like, man, I could not listen to that podcast.
His podcast is cool, but like, it is one of those things where his voice is so like it's called Program to Chill. I mean, obviously, but his voice is just like very like it can lull you because he's so.
Yeah. I just couldn't listen to it. I mean, like I said, no disrespect. Like,
His podcast is good. Like
it's good.
But you gotta make sure that you've got like your cup of coffee sometimes because it goes long, it goes in depth, and his voice is very like dry. And
coffee.
Like,
you need cocaine. Like you need to have
a but shout out to him. I think he's making like a lot of those episodes free now. He's just like releasing all
this.
Yeah,
he shit did. Yeah,
because he put them all out. Yeah, that's dope. So yeah, I definitely feel like
He's cool.
There's a space for that because since he's walking away, you know, from that shit,
yeah,
we can definitely do a podcast that's more just going down those rabbit holes, those program to kill rabbit holes, and
yeah, I mean, there's some movies that are really, you know, I saw a movie not too long ago, In the Cold of the Night, which kind of covers some of that like. Programmed killer kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, what's
they're out there?
Are weaponized amnesia? You know, that type of shit is fascinating. You know what I'm saying? Where like this, you get a they just have somebody like that. They have basically kill somebody and then they don't remember shit. Like you know what I mean? Like what? You know what I mean? Yeah. So that type of shit is fascinating. That type of shit is definitely I'd be something that I could probably, you know, do. A deep dive on. I feel like it's so easy to go down those wormholes, bro. Like, because they're so
too easy.
There's no bottom. There's no bottom to that shit.
There's,
so
there's no bottom.
that's definitely a good idea. I'm trying to think of. I just came across this other movie recently, and I have it. I'm looking through my Mac drive because I downloaded it just based off the strength of like I've never fucking seen this before. But it's a movie that is. About some Palestinians like kidnapping some people and then like basically it basically frames them as like evil, like just evil as fuck, like you know what I'm saying. Then they bring a guy in to go get the we gotta kick back. You know, it's like Munich but like on some Munich was based on like real shit. I don't even know if this was based on real shit, but I downloaded it the other day and I was like, I've never heard of this movie. But when I watched the trailer, I was like, oh, this is fucking insane. Like, like how is this just normal? You know what I mean? Like, given like the context of today. And like, but I know how it was normal because it's been normal. It was normalized my entire life. Like, you know what I mean? Where it was like, there was one way to view the Middle East and there was one way to view that conflict specifically. And it wasn't through the prism of some sort of like settler colonial project. You know what I'm saying? It was like, no, there's terrorists. And like, you know,
there's democracies and,
sorry, democracies and fucking anti-Islam, Islamic, fucking, you know, terrorism and shit. As if like, you know, again, we are just talking about it as if there's no Christian terrorists. Like we just talked about the Tokyo gas attack. Like that was a Christian sect. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, the Unification Church. I mean,
yeah. I mean, that's any kind of reactionary force these days that isn't like outright fascist is kind of Christian in character, kind of.
I think is that movie called the Royal Hotel? It might be the Royal Hotel. No, that's not it. That's a new movie.
Yeah, it doesn't sound right.
Yeah, it doesn't look good either. it might be the Jackpot from 1991.
The Jackpot.
Or maybe it's not. You know what? Let me Google it, Fred, while we're here. Is it the Jackpot from 1991? Have you seen any movies? Because I know you watch a lot of fucking movies that are, you know, obscure and not typical.
Yeah.
Have you seen any other movies that are more or less radical as of late that are in line with sort of Revolution Plus One from like a 2024 or, you know, kind of past couple of years? I guess Plus One is obviously 2 years ago, but you know what I mean? Cause it's really hard for me to pinpoint a lot of things like specifically.
No, I mean, really, really, I haven't. No, nothing as radical. I mean, I feel like Revolution Plus One is almost like it almost kind of shook me awake. You know, watching it was almost kind of, almost like,
yeah,
you know, I've been asleep like these past couple of years. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of, radical. I don't want to say radicalism. There's a lot of, there was a lot of brave filmmaking, I feel like, the past couple of years. I mean, there always is, you know, but like politically radical, man, you know, the stuff that affects me or that has affected me these past few years has been more like, you know, radical in like maybe in an emotional sense or like a, you know, like kind of a human sense, you know, like, I don't know, maybe, you know, like Master Gardener, for example. That really affected me. That's not politically radical, but that's like, that affected me, like just kind of the
That Paul Schrader worldview is something, bro.
I mean, it's kind of radical, like compared to like a lot of, you know, especially compared to like a lot of the people who kind of get like these who get lauded as like, you know, progressive or whatever. I think he is actually one of the few filmmakers who actually articulate like genuinely like progressive ideas these days, whatever that means, you know. But so, you know, that's kind of more of the stuff. But like, really, I have to say, I Revolution Plus One has been like a movie that I was, or a contemporary movie that I was very much waiting for in that way.
I think I feel similar. You're right though. Schrader is one of those guys who, like, you know, he comes from a different era, and like his movie, he's still making movies from that headspace. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, he made Mishima. So, I mean,
so that tells you a lot. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, who would make that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what American filmmaker besides him would make something like that? I don't even know if a lot of guys of his generation
would even make
that movie, you know.
Yeah,
so
let alone today. Yeah, true.
Yeah. And it's funny because like as I go to look for this movie, all I see is just like a bunch of pink movies. like what the fuck? It's like, oh, you got a bunch of pink movies on here. Like, what the heck? Like, you know what I mean? Like, am I ever gonna watch all half of these? I don't know.
You probably will.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about pink movies is they're short. You know what exactly. I mean? They're like an hour, maybe a little, you know, a couple.
Yeah, months. I actually recently, I've been looking for this for a while online, but I recently got this actually, The Dream of Garuda.
Physical copy. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because like, you know, I had to watch this shit on like a porn site before. I had to watch this on X videos and like a horrible low res version. So,
yeah.
So, you know, I finally got one that wasn't like $200. This was like $40. So,
you know, where'd you get it? Oh, you get it like off of like a fucking, like, I don't know if you guys have eBay over there or not.
No, I locked out on eBay.
eBay? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cause I know like in Japan,
it's like a region free, it's like a region zero.
Yeah, I know in Japan they have Yahoo. It's like eBay is Yahoo, whatever. Like it's not eBay.
I've seen that before, and like I always think like, oh damn, I got it, but then they don't. You know, I can't navigate it because I don't know what it says.
That's another thing that like I end up doing too, which is like looking for these physical copies and not getting robbed in the process of trying to buy them again.
Because some of this shit is obscene. I mean, come on, I'm not paying $200 for like
right. Garuda. A lot of that shit is like, I'm not ever paying $200. Fuck you, you know. Especially when the chances are you could randomly come across it for $2 somewhere. Like
exactly, because most people don't know what they have.
Right. It's like, oh yeah, but there's these people that are like searching and trying to fucking upsell this shit. This rare. Yeah.
Oh, one of the worst developments in recent years. Just everything.
It's
Discogs logic.
Scarcity. Like it's that scarcity economy bullshit, right?
Yeah, I fucking hate it.
It's the hype beastification of the shit. Like, cause you know, like doing the drops and shit. Like, we're gonna do a specific drop of this of these Supreme shit, and we're gonna mark the price up, and then that's it, and then it's like it's never coming back.
Yeah.
And then of course people buy it, and then they resell it. I hate that shit. But you know, again, that's part of the reason why I want to build a gun and go assassinate.
You heard it here
redacted,
first.
Redacted.
In Minecraft,
I want to build a gun and assassinate the fake capitalist pigs.
Joe Biden.
It's all jokes. I've never done that. Relax. I wouldn't even know how to do it. And I don't have the patience to buy a 3D printer because those cost money too, and I heard that they show up at your door anyways, like that's America for you. Don't you know about those guys that like 3D print switches for weapons because America's gun crazy?
Yeah,
so you basically for those who don't know, like you can turn a gun into an automatic gun. Because automatic weapons, semi-automatic is legal here in America because we're psychos. But automatic is a bridge too far.
Yeah.
But there's a workaround. If you want to have an automatic weapon, and I don't think that you should. But if you were for some reason, people sell them. And those people usually get arrested because it's illegal. It's very illegal. And if you own one, you will also get arrested. It's very illegal, and Mutual Aberration Society does not promote illegal activity. But for the sake of an argument, if you were to be interested in a thing like that, they 3D print these things that are switches that you attach to the gun, and then it turns a semi-auto into a fully automatic weapon, which is why America is fucked up.
One of the many reasons.
And I'm not saying America's fucked up at all because of the guns. I'm saying that America's fucked up for everything. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, like the fact that we live in a world or a situation where like that is a thing at all kind of speaks to a greater problem, a systematic problem.
You don't get one without the other. Like you don't get this insane thing without that insane thing.
And you gotta ask yourself like, like why would you need a switch? Why do people feel they need that? And just go deeper into that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't just think on the base level of like, because I'm not an anti-gun person. I'm not. Like, I'm not at all.
Yeah.
So don't misconstrue that comment as if, Ryan is anti-gun. No, I'm not. I'm saying think about why people want automatic versions of the weapons they already own. Just think about it. Think about the various potential reasons why that would be the case. Yeah. And while you think about that, draw a greater connection to America. And I think that you will get sort of in the same kind of headspace that I am. And you'll probably like a movie like Revolution Plus One, you know.
That's your future, liking this weird shit.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to sort of put a button on it. As always, thanks, Fred. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
Back
thank
on. You. It's great to chop it up with you. What do you got going on? You know, I know that you started a few things that I feel like you should probably mention for folks. So
take yeah, care. Right. I guess you're referring to the Substack.
Yes.
Which, I mean, I write a Substack called Electric Dreams. I've recently opened it to outside contributors because, you know, shit is fucked up. People need to get, you know, their work out there. Publications are closing. So
do you take AI submission?
Hey, yeah, sure. Yeah, of course. I love technology. The more artificial, the better, really. I will take a piece on AI.
Yeah.
As long as it's anti-AI. But yeah, so you know, you can feel free to reach out to me. I mean, I guess you'll link all my Twitter shit and whatever. It's my pinned tweet, electricdreams92@gmail.com. Pitch me and you'll get paid. Guaranteed.
Yes, you get paid. You get that bag.
Get that bag.
Chase better that bag, everybody.
Dunkin' Donuts.
and yes, definitely do that. Fred is you're doing the Lord's work right now in doing this, given the state of our world and people in general just getting paid to do anything at all, writing or creatively at all.
Dropping a huge bucket, but you know, you gotta like Revolution Plus One, you gotta right. operate within your sphere. You gotta
right.
do what
you know. Sometimes you gotta build a gun and assassinate a political leader. Other times you gotta start a Substack where you pay people to write. You know, like
I think those two things are pretty much the same. I think.
I mean, it is Adachi who has that quote, right? Which is, should I pull it up? Let me pull it up.
Because go for it.
He made this quote. Instead of replacing the camera with the rifle, why not have one in each hand?
There you go.
And that's why Adachi is, as the young people say, goated right there. So
now that's a spot to put a button on it.
Yeah. So yeah, as always, you know, I don't know how to end these things. So this is the end. Cue random song that I'm not paying the artist for because come find me.
Bitch, this spirit too serious. Deep is way too curious. Boston, George, I'm smuggling through the interior. Stuck in the matrix, all I see is green like Vanetta. Who me, nigga, barking on the wrong street like old yellow. Miami Cafe, no Saudi Arabia. Spirit, Japanese, Arcadia, Belgium. We got everything in the contest selling. Talk with the guests and watch us shelf it. Came around waking the end of a felon. Turn to a corpse, your body is smelling. Got a chicken neck like a water in the side. When it comes to the club, got a Summer Boy bottle. Tell me what your bitch, yeah, I brought her own model. Been listening, lemonade, Aristotle. Swimming in the deep, I ain't bring no goggles. Hit him with the hollow, he sleep like hollow. Bit this seer too smearious. Little bit dazed and phased, she too delirious. All this birthday cake, to know what day of the year it is. She said mom still work when she on the period. Ha! Bit this bit too furious. Sky high burns on my bike like food fight in the cafeteria. Black beans all on my bike, Malcolm X in the flesh. Chrome heart on the lens, I can see X-ray through the chest. Capital Dean with the stone corner roar with the crest. Happy 99 button up with the Babylon vest. Ha! Smear gear Ray Mysterious. Walk the Van Buren's like mask on like a trick or treat. trick-or-treating. Run my boots, don't fuck Peter D.